Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 150. I'm recording it on Wednesday, July 22nd, 2009. The PE10 level today is 16. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. The title of this selection is Somewhere Sunny. The title of the podcast is Follow the Money and You Will Love What You Do. I started recording the podcast, or I sometimes call them Robcast, to be cute, back about a year ago, this time. I don't know the exact date, but it was summer of 2009. And my intent when I started recording them was to record roughly an equal number of investing podcast and saving podcast. And that's what I did with articles at my site. My preference is to break it up evenly. So people interested in saving have saving material. People interested in investing have investing material. My saving material has been about 5,000 times more popular than my investing material. I was the most loved poster at the Motley Fool site in the days when I posted only about passion saving. And I became the most hated poster on the entire internet when I started posting the realities of safe withdrawal rates and of stock investing in general, the extent to which valuations affect long-term returns. I think that's unfortunate. I think that's sad. But it is what it is. But, that's one of the reasons why I like to mix it up. So the idea is, people like the saving stuff, give them the saving stuff, but I've known for a long, long time that we needed more realistic investing advice. And that we were going to hurt ourselves, especially people hoping to retire early, with the crazy passive investing gibberish, which has done such damage, caused such human misery. And so I've always felt that I had to do the investing material, but I like to mix it up with the savings so that people are getting some stuff they like, along with the vegetables, along with the spinach that they have to eat, whether they like it or not. But I recorded four or five of them, and the boom hit. We had that stock crash in September, and so that just caused all kinds of things to happen. One thing, it caused people to be a little more open to realistic investing ideas. Two, it caused me to start thinking about all sorts of things I had never thought about. Three, it generated some fantastic stuff in the media. Just fantastic stuff has been coming out in the past, 7-8 months. The best stuff on investing I've seen in years. And so and of course, a lot of discussion among our community members at the Retire Early and Indexing discussion boards. People are, some are open to the idea of giving up on passive investing. Some are defending passive investing. Some are, looking into it. So it's been a troubled time, but it's been an exciting time intellectually to see these ideas kicking in and new ideas opening up and growing. So I've turned during that time to doing strictly investing podcasts, and now I'm not up to number 150, and I've been wanting to get in some saving ones, and I still have a lot of investing titles to go, so I think it's going to be some time. Ultimately, my goal would be to have half and half, but it's going to take a long time to get there. It's going to take years because I still have at least another 50 or 100 investing podcasts I'd like to do. And so I'll try to squeeze. What I'm going to try to do is every now and then, maybe one out of every 10, two out of every 10, stick in a saving podcast. So I was at a blog yesterday morning, and a question came up relating to on the saving side or the career side. The question of whether it's a good idea to do what you love, and the money will follow. And so I wrote my comment, and then as I wrote it, I said, boy, this is nice, talking about saving. It's been a long time. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to do one of those saving podcasts. And I just scribbled down some notes and I said, you better do it today because I was tied up yesterday. But I said, you better do it today because if you don't do it, you'll forget about it. You know, get it, get one down there, get one saving podcast down. So I'm going to do that. I just decided whether I have the time or not, I'm going to do it. And the debate, it's an old debate. There are people who say, do what you love. Do what you love. This is as much a career growth podcast as it is a saving podcast, but it has a saving angle. You'll see as we go. But it's really career growth. But do what you love and the money will follow. It's a very popular phrase among dreamers. But I think there's a lot of truth to it because the truth there is if you do what you love, you're going to do it 10 times better than if you're doing something you don't love. And if you do what you love, you're going to have so much more energy. One of the things that determines success down the road is energy. And so you've got to be doing what you love. I know this guy, Malcolm Gladwell, very popular writer. I think he wrote, did he write The Tipping Point, I believe? And he's written some other books. And he came out with one recently. I haven't read it, but I just saw a review of it somewhere. But it's about success. And you know, he's an interesting guy. He has interesting thinking. And one of the things he was saying, he was talking about the Beatles, you know, and I didn't read the book. I'm just going by secondhand account. But, you know, one of the things that made them a success is that they had worked it so hard back in, you know, Germany, playing at these dives, you know, where people were throwing beer bottles at them. So by the time they got to the United States, they had it down. But the point was, it takes a lot of work, you know, to have overnight success. But, you know, what makes people, he was trying to determine what makes some people do that work, put in all that time, and others just never quite get that far. In other words, there were 50 bands that were sort of Beatle-ish, you know, Beatle-like, that didn't make it, or didn't make it nearly as big. What made them different? It's that drive. Well, that comes from doing what you love. I remember, I've read something on Paul McCartney once years and years ago, but, you know, when he was 9 years old, he said he would take the bass guitar into the bathroom with him. You know, he couldn't stand not to be playing it. So, do what you love and the money will follow. Somebody on this board was making fun of the idea, you know, saying it's stupid. And there is a stupid side to it. There are a lot of people who do what they love and they end up busted. And they end up having to take the most, you know, mundane job they can get, anything to bring in money, and they lose from every angle. They're not doing what they love. They're not getting money. They're just lost. So I think that phrase, that idea, has hurt a lot of people, but I think it's wrong to dismiss it because I think there's great power in it. So we need to take the good and leave behind what's misleading about it. Now somebody, I think this was the owner of the blog. I think it was called the Consumerism Commentary blog, something like that. And the owner of the blog, he didn't like the do what you love thing at all. And he said, oh, you know, and then he was talking about, what's his name? Kiyosaki, the rich dad guy. And he said, oh, you know, Kiyosaki puts down working for a corporation. He says, there's nothing wrong with working for a corporation. That's fine. Well, I'm not thrilled about working for a corporation. Now, again, I take a middle ground. My good friend John Graney, retireearlyhomepage.com. I remember John has been attacking me over the investing stuff for a good long time now, but one time I had a discussion with somebody, T. Murray, at John's discussion board, and she was talking about why these people are so fierce in their defense of John on the safe withdrawal rate question, and he said, you know, we always hated our jobs. And we went to John's site, and he told us it was okay to hate our jobs. We didn't have to feel bad. We didn't have to apologize. It was okay to hate our jobs. And I think she was hitting it on the head. I think there's a lot of affection for him because of that. He's sort of nasty. He's a nasty individual. But he tapped into something with his anti-corporate riff, you know, that goes on at his website. How to retire early because you want to stick it to the man. Now, you know, John and I worked together at Motley Fool for a while and we were friends. And, you know, I didn't tap into that the way T. Murray did or John did. But I did a little bit. I remember one of my most famous posts was called Unwritten Rules of Wage Slavery. And it got that retire early board on the map. At the old days, what you had to do at Motley Fool to get discovered was they used to have a best of board. And if you got your post onto the best of board, all people from all over the site would come to see your board. And I put that post up, Unwritten Rules of Wage Slavery. This was December of 99, I believe. And man, we had like 1,000 people come in. Our board tripled. I remember I looked at the numbers one time. The size of the board community tripled in one day. And then never went back. People loved it. And people tapped into this. And I was sort of tapping into that same, you know, dissatisfaction that John tapped into at his website. This idea that the employer's the bad guy. The employer's the man. And I certainly do not feel that as strongly as John. Every employer I've had, I've learned things from. Everyone, I'm grateful for the experiences. Had lots of good times. So I don't have that hate or anger. I don't think it's healthy, so I don't encourage it in anybody else. But I do have the reason I could write a post called Unwritten Rules of Wage Slavery is I do believe you can get trapped in a corporate job. That I believe very strongly. I think it's a potential trap. You know, it's the way the world is. You got to do what you got to do. So I don't say you shouldn't work for a corporation, but I think you got to be careful. I think you got to watch out for yourself. And I think the corporation should encourage that. They should encourage us to watch out for ourselves. So I don't even think what I'm saying is in any way anti-corporate, though some people hear it that way. So I believe in fighting not to be a wage slave, but not having any anger or hate, you know, or negativity about it. So I don't agree with the phrase, do what you love and the money will follow. I think it has great truth in it, but it's dangerous if applied improperly. And I don't believe in the idea that this fellow at the blog put forward that, you know, it's okay to be corporate employed. It's okay to be corporate employed for a time, certainly. But the rug can get pulled out from under you without warning, and you're left high and dry, and you've got a certain lifestyle, and you're used to spending, you know, whatever it is, $60,000 a year, and all of a sudden you don't have $60,000 a year, you have nothing. And More often than not, you lose your job in a recession, which means everybody else is losing their job at the same time, which means your chances of getting an equally appealing job at the same salary are not good. And you end up compromising, you end up going backwards, and that's a real bad feeling. And I've experienced that feeling, and it's one of the worst feelings there is. So I don't like either of these ideas. So I remember when I was writing my book, Passion Saving, I don't know if this ended up getting in the book. I have a feeling it got cut out, but that's my, you know, I should know, but it's been a while since I've read the book. But I think this, the idea is in the book. I think this phrase got cut out. I don't think I had room for it, but I always liked the phrase. What I did was I sort of turned around this idea of these two sayings, do what you love and the money will follow. And I sort of turned the words around and came up with follow the money and you will do what you love. It's a little too complicated to catch on, I'm afraid. But it does make an important point. And the point is, I'll go through it and sort of explain it. But the point of the saying is, the point of the title of this podcast is, all middle-class workers need to pay more attention to money management. Money management, as I mentioned earlier, I said this is a saving blog, a money management blog. A money management podcast, and also a career development podcast. Well, the whole argument of Passion Saving, the book, is the two things are the same thing. This is the great undiscovered truth of money management, in Rob Bennett's opinion. When you manage your money, you are managing your life, or you could say you're managing your career, because your career takes up many hours of your life. Ultimately, you're managing your life, but in the early days of it, when you're starting to manage your money, what you're managing is your career, and as you gain more autonomy, you're managing your life. What I try to do in all of my writing and podcast is integrate different aspects of the money management experience. And to understand how to manage your money effectively, you need to integrate You're thinking about saving money and you're thinking about earning money because they're two sides of a single coin. The reason you go to work is to generate money to live on. You're trading, the employment relationship is trading hours of your labor, hours of your life for money. You're giving up your life for money. This was Joe Dominguez's big insight. So if you want to gain more control over your life, gain more control over your money. That's why the title of the book is Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. You know, ask people, do you like to save money? And they'll say, yuck. You know, ask me if I like Brussels sprouts. Ask me if I like, you know, going to the dentist. But ask people, do you like the idea of having unlimited free time? And they'll say, yeah. Ask them, do you like the idea of having soul-satisfying work? And they'll say, yeah. Well, that's what saving gets you. That's what saving is all about. Saving gets you free time. Saving gives you back control of your time, which means it gives you back control of your life, which means it's exciting. It's not boring. What makes saving boring is this unfortunate idea that's been adopted by my friends, the money management experts, that the only reason to save is for an old age retirement. Well, when you're saving for something that's not going to happen for 40 years, yeah, saving is boring because it has no relevance to your day-to-day life. But when you're saving to regain control of your life and to regain control of your career, saving is exciting. So the point of the podcast title is, follow the money, become money aware, money conscious, and you will end up loving the work you do because you will gain power. You will become empowered. And as you become empowered, you won't have to take jobs for the money. You'll be able to take jobs just for the thrill of it. And all of us have work we love to do. Each and every soul on this planet has work that he or she would love to do. Some of us aren't even aware of it. We're so deadened by the feeling that we have to work for money. We have to do whatever the tune calls for, that we've blocked out of our consciousness all the things we would love to be doing with our energies. And if we gained a higher level of financial freedom, we would regain that excitement. And I, you know, look, I'm an effusive person, but I believe it would change the world. To have millions of people doing what they love would change the world. But in order to do what we love, we've got to start paying more attention to money. It's got to happen in a chain like that. Follow the money and you will love what you do. So that it includes that part about, the thing I love about do what you love and the money will follow is it's got that passion in it. It's got that energy and you don't want to give that up. That's a moneymaker. People that say, oh, that's unrealistic, that's dreamy, they're missing the point. That is energy. That's where human energy comes from. Love, passion. They're not dreamy words. They're the most practical words of all. Everything in this world that's been accomplished at some level was accomplished out of love. Give up the love and you give everything up. You'll end up depressed. You'll end up an alcoholic. You'll end up on drugs. You'll end up zoned out in front of the television. You'll end up lazy, fat. You'll end up getting fired. You'll end up dishonest. Got to have love. Got to have passion. You got to have energy. But you got to make it practical. You got to pull it down and root it to the earth. And the way you root it to the earth is by becoming money aware. So follow the money and you will love what you do. Now, there was a book that had a great influence on my thinking in the career development field. And I can't even, I don't have the book. I borrowed it from the library years ago. And I wish I could, I can't even get the title exactly right. It was The Doomed Loop, either The Doom Loop System or The Doomed Loop Quadrant, something like that. It was a very good book. I wish I could give credit to the author. I just don't recall. But it had a great premise. And it described what happens in the work environment that was rang very true for me. And what the author said was, there are four stages to the career growth process, and then it repeats. And at each of these stages, either the worker, there are sort of two factors. The worker can be happy or sad, happy or dissatisfied, let's say. And the employer can be happy or dissatisfied with the employee's work. So the employee can be happy or unhappy and productive or unproductive. And depending on which combination of those, you can be in any of four quadrants. The first quadrant is, and this is when you start a job, when you take your first job out of school. The employee is happy because the job is new and challenging. The employee is excited to be out in the work world. It's got a big challenge. But the employee is not terribly productive. Most of us starting out, we really don't know what we're doing, and our fellow employees are more or less carrying us for the first year. Because we don't have the experience. We have book knowledge, and that's it. So the employee's happy. The employer's not so happy. That's the first stage. But then, with experience, if the employee survives this tough challenge, the employee becomes competent, even highly competent. Now, the employee is happy still. There's still a challenge in the job. The employee still likes the job. But the employee now is competent. And so everybody's happy. The employer's happy too. Everything's great. And if only everything could stop there, wouldn't it be a wonderful world? That would, all our problems would be solved. But see, what people leave out when they think that that's the end is they leave out human nature. Human nature is, no matter how much you rise up in this world, you're always going to want to rise up some more. That's human nature. It's true in the spending area. It's true in the work area. So you're in this great situation where you're happy and your employer's happy. And what happens? Your mind, your heart starts reaching for more. Your soul starts reaching for more. You're not 100% happy. After you become fully competent, when you achieve total competence, you start looking for a new challenge. And if your employer adds to your responsibilities, gives you a promotion, whatever, then this whole system can start over again and everything's great. But what if that doesn't happen? What if you just stay at that same job after you have mastered it? Well, after 6 months or so of staying at the same job you've mastered, you will start to get bored. Now, the employee is no longer happy. The employee is bored. The employer is still happy because the employee is plenty competent. The employee has mastered this job, but the employee's bored. And then the fourth stage, if this continues for a long time, several years, you get to a point where the employee has not been challenged for so long. Say that the employee is in a job where you have to put in 25 years or 30 years to get a pension. And he says, well, I'm going to hang around for that pension. I can't leave now. Or, you know, at 10 years, your 401k vest or something, and you say, well, I'm going to wait for vesting, whatever it happens to be. Or maybe the employee just can't take a chance. The employee, you know, has a big mortgage, or the employee has young children. He says, I can't try a new job. And the employer doesn't have anywhere to put them that's a promotion. And so the employee just keeps doing this boring job. Boring not because it's a bad job. Boring because the employee has mastered it. The employee becomes not only bored, but disgruntled, angry, depressed. And now, the employee actually becomes incompetent. The employee knows how to do the job, but the employee is so disgusted, he or she is barely willing to show up for work, or he starts becoming surly and, you know, throwing wrenches into things, you know, picking on little things, you know, not being responsive to customers. So now you've got an unhappy employee and an unhappy employer. And where does that lead? It leads to the employee getting fired. Disaster. And if only the employee had been given challenging work at the right time, everything would have worked. The employee would have... Human beings need to grow. This is the moral. Human beings need to grow. And this is why we need to pay attention to the passion part. We need to pay attention to the do what you love part. If we all get too practical and just take jobs for the money, we're not going to be satisfied. It will work in the short term. It will not work in the long term because it's not in tune with human nature. And, you know, if you work for a great employer, well, the employer is going to put a stress on. The employer understands this. We need to develop our employees. But a lot of employers give lip service to that idea, but they don't do it. You know, presumably they intend to, but there's always that budget to meet, and there's always the deadline to meet, and this sort of gets pushed into third place, and it doesn't get done. And sometimes circumstances just don't permit it. You know, go into a recession, and they can't afford to be, you know, expanding into new areas. They can't. There are no promotions. So, you know, it's a dying industry, whatever. So, this is the doom loop system. Now, that very much lines up with how life has played out for me. You know, I can just remember. I remember the job I had at Daily Tax Report. I got that job out of school. And I mean, I go to church today. I wasn't a church-going person in those days. And children will do that to you. And I prayed for that job. You know, I said, you remember that Paul Simon? I really like this line from the Paul Simon album. He said, "Here I am, Lord, knocking at your place of business. And I know I ain't got no business here. But you said if I ever got busted, you could be trusted." I like that line a lot. And that's how I was. I was, you know, when I was going for that job, because I had been out of work. I graduated school in the this was the recession of the, one of those earlier recessions, early 90s, yeah. And it wasn't a real big recession, but it was big to me. It was big to me. I couldn't get a job. And you know, I found this job, Daily Tax Report. And I said, "That's what I want to do. That's what I was put on earth to do." You know, at the time. And so, yeah, I got that job and I loved it. I mean, I was just happy. I remember, it makes me laugh when I think about it. I've always had this sort of side to me. I'm not nasty, but deliberately provocative. There's something about saying provocative things that I cannot resist. I just can't. I always do it with a smile. I'm never nasty, but I can't resist. I just can't. And we had a union, and I was in the union in the beginning, but then I wasn't later. But the manager, she was a woman, and she would come around and deliver the checks in person. You know, I think she wanted credit, you know, that she was giving you your money. And, you know, the union people would tend to have this thing of, I don't know what the phrase is, dog in the manger, you know, sort of like nothing was good enough, you know. Oh, the benefits here are crummy. This is crummy, you know. And I was so happy, you know, to be at that job. And she would hand me my check, and I'd say, "What? We're getting paid again? This seems like we just got paid. Getting paid again?" And the union people would, they'd be going, "Was it time to get paid again?" You know. And I'd say, "Man, this job's good enough to do for free. They pay people to do this? What's the story here?" I just couldn't resist. I'm sorry. I'm bad. Everybody knows it. Anyway, the point was, I loved my job. Loved it. But then, you know, this thing happened, and I wish I could have held that forever. I had a wonderful little life in those days. I was single, and I could walk to work. I was living in DuPont Circle, Washington. I could walk to work, a wonderful thing, 10-minute walk to work. Journalists start a little, we didn't have to be in till 10. You know, we had to stay till 6 or 7, but we didn't have to be in till 10. Because I guess the theory is news happens late in the day, and you don't have to be there early, you have to be there late. So, I mean, I didn't have to wake up. If I stayed up late at night or went to a baseball game or a concert, you know, I could get up at 9 o'clock, run into the shower, and still be at work by 10. You know, so I could be up until 2 in the morning and get 7 hours sleep. It was a great life for a young guy. Great city, Washington. It was great. Anyway, but the point was, it just like in this Doom Loop system, it went on for some time. It went on for some time. And I started to feel, wait a minute, I've mastered this. I need to go on to move something else. And they didn't have really anything to offer me. There was nowhere to, for a while they did. I got several promotions. But I got to a point where I couldn't go any higher. The only thing they could offer me was management, which would have been good financially, but it was not what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a reporter. I wanted to write about things. And they had nothing. And so I started doing things to, you know, I wrote some articles for newspapers and things, and they found out about it, and they were mad, and it was, you know, we were in these conflicts. And I didn't want to be in conflicts. I loved these people, but it was like, you have nothing for me here. And I didn't want to leave because I loved it, and then finally you had to work up the courage to leave. Or I would have ended up so disgruntled I would have gotten fired. You see? That's what happens. This is what happens in life. And so we all need to pay attention both to the... It's true that we need to pay attention to the practical side, just like our parents tell us. But we have to pay attention to the passion side, the energy side. You know, just like the dreamers tell us, the movies, I guess, you know, tell us. If you don't do that, nothing works. The practical doesn't work without the dreamer side, and the dreamer side doesn't work without the practical side. The practical one needs to marry the dreamer. That's what it's all about. So, the question becomes, how do you make this happen? If we could change the world, if we could make all employers, you know, highly, whatever the word would be, progressive or whatever the word is, it'd be great. The employers would watch you, and when they knew that you needed a new challenge, they would move you up, and everybody would stay happy and productive and well paid. But it's just not realistic to expect the employer to do that, because, I mean, first of all, they don't do it. I mean, some do, but most do not. But secondly, even if they all tried to do it, they can't do it. The employer has to make money. They have shareholders. They can't. They can try, you know. It's good if they try. They should try. And some do. Almost all of them make some effort, and some make a lot of effort. But there's just limits to what they can do. They're in a certain industry. They're tied. And if they're a big company, they're really tied. There's just limits to what they can do. They can do it more in a small company, I think. But the bigger companies, they can't bend everything for the individual employee. Big companies have big benefits. You know, that's the benefit of a big company, and security and all this sort of thing, and opportunity. But they can't, they don't have, you know, they can't be as creative. It's just not, they can't. So if the employer can't do it, who needs to do it? The answer is the employee needs to do it. The employee needs to manage his own career. And he needs to manage it for growth. And growth means not just raises. Growth means new challenges. New challenges will produce raises. If you move to a new level of competence and authority and responsibility and creativity, raises will follow. The money will follow. It's true in that respect. It is a half-truth. And you want to tap into that half-truth. So you've got to figure out a way to make this happen. And you need to take charge of it. You can't say, well, I'm going to wait for my employer to do that. The employer can't do it. You need to do it. All right, you need to do it, but how? You don't run the company. You don't run the company, so how are you going to do it? This is where the money part comes in. With money... What money is I say the two things, you know, I talk about something called the Freedom Store. The book is divided into three parts, and I call part one the Freedom Store. And what I try to push is the idea that when you spend money, you obtain goods and services. And goods and services are wonderful. I don't believe in putting down spending. I think spending is wonderful. The reason why we like to spend is because it's fun. But it's not just fun. It's life-enhancing. And there's more wonderful things to spend money on in today's world than there's ever been in the past. And that is a good thing, says Rob Bennett. We have more choices. It's a good thing. The trouble is today is that it's not disciplined. It's not reined in. It's out of control. But it's a good thing. It's a good thing that we have these options. But spending yields goods and services. Saving yields freedom and opportunity. Freedom and opportunity. Saving, it essentially gives you flexibility. Because if, say that you're in one of these situations, this doom loop situation, and you know, you've been at a job, you're good at it, you've advanced. You know, now you're making more money than you ever thought you would, but you still spend it all, you know. You figured out a way to spend it all. And you're disgruntled. You know, you were getting lots of, and this is the typical pattern. You get lots of raises in your 20s and 30s. Because the reason you get lots of raises is you're so dumb starting out. You don't know anything. So it's pretty easy to move up. Every time, it's like a little baby, you know, they learn how to talk in like 6 months, and you're like, man, you sure got smart. Well, it's the same thing when you're starting the work world. You know, now you start out knowing nothing. So, yeah, you pick up a few tricks, and all of a sudden, you double your salary. And rightly so. But somewhere around your late 30s, you've picked up pretty much all the tricks you can pick up at this particular employer. And now you're sort of stuck. And that's when trouble begins. And as I say, it can lead to getting fired. It's not a joke. Or it can lead to a deadening of your soul. It can lead, if it doesn't lead to getting fired, if the job is, you know, sort of by rote and you can phone it in, maybe you hold the job and you hold the big check, but you lose your zest for life. And when you lose your zest for life, you're losing a lot. And maybe you start to eat too much, or you start to drink too much, or watch TV too much. Get in arguments with your spouse. This sort of thing. You head into the dead zone. So what can you do about that? If your employer can't help you, what can you do? Well, if you save money, and all these things work, in just the way to make it work. In other words, it would be hard to save money when you're in your 20s. When you're learning all this stuff and you're moving up, you're not getting paid much, so it's hard to save money. But by the time the doom loop system kicks in, let's say you're mid-30s, you've moved up several times. You're making a lot more than when you started, maybe three times, maybe four times. So if you wanted to, you could save money. You could. But the, you know, because you're dissatisfied with your job, you have this temptation to say, well, I'll go on more vacations. You know, that'll make the job bearable. I mean, I went through all this stuff. You know, I know the story. I'll go on more vacations. That'll make the job bearable. I'll buy a sports car. I'll buy a bigger house. You know, on and on. You medicate the situation. Well, if you do that, then you're really in a trap. You're in a trap you can't get out of. Because now, when you were young, you know, you were earning $20,000. And all you had to do, if you wanted to change jobs, was find a job that paid $20,000. And you were at a level of not super, you know, great skills. So there were thousands of these jobs available. You know, there's a lot more $20,000 jobs around than there are $60,000 jobs. So there were a lot of them around for you. But now, you know, you're making 60, and you need 60. There's not many $60,000 jobs around, or, you know, whatever the number is. And you're in a trap. You're in a trap. And if you medicate it by just spending more, the trap gets tighter. And sooner or later, you're going to get fired or laid off. And you're going to be in bad straits. You've lost the passion, you know. You can't take a $20,000 job anymore. But if you transferred some of that money into savings, then you're performing a magic act. You're taking this material we call money, and you're turning it into freedom and opportunity. Because if instead of spending $60,000, you're only spending $40,000, which is still double what you used to spend, and $20,000 goes into savings every year, you're building up your savings quickly, and when you get to $100,000 that you didn't have before, you've got a lot more flexibility in terms of what job you take, because that $100,000 is generating income, and you can use that to pay some of your expenses. You don't have to earn all of your expenses from your job. Now, it gets, you know, the question of how to set it up and all that. There's a section of my book called The Money Bridge where I talk about that, and I'll do a separate podcast on that, The Money Bridge. Talk about how to set it up. There's, of course, all different strategies. But the concept is you need, when I say follow the money in the title of this podcast, what I'm saying is keep your eye on the money and you will end up loving what you do. Because keep your eye on the money, and instead of just letting that money slip through your hands, or instead of letting that money be used to medicate your depression caused by your dissatisfaction with your job, take that money and channel it into flexibility, career flexibility, by saving it and having this engine that generates money for you so that your reliance on a paycheck is reduced. And as you reduce your reliance on a paycheck now, you can start considering all types of jobs you couldn't have considered before. Jobs that pay less than the one you have. And you might say, well, why would I want a job that pays less? Well, because there's more of that do what you love in it. You see, do what you love is a powerful idea, but it's wasted on the young. The people who follow it are people who are in their 20s. They try to do what they love. What we should be doing is the opposite. When you're young and you don't really know much, you should be following the corporate route, learning, soaking up all the experience and knowledge you can, practical knowledge. You know, young people have enough fun. They don't need to have fun at their jobs. I'm joking. But there's some truth to that. But as you get older, as you get into your late 30s and 40s and 50s, you want to be having some enjoyment in your career. And to do that, that's when you want to be doing what you love. So at 40, it makes all the sense in the world to take a pay reduction and move into a different track where the work is more fun. You could be trading dollars for fun. You might just say, hey, I'm happy to take less money in return for enjoying my life more. You know, I've paid my dues. I'm willing to take less money and enjoy my work more. Or you might say, I'm willing to take less money to have more opportunity. In this new field, I'm taking less money in the short term, but I expect to hit it big because I'm doing what I love. Now, I've done this. You know, I didn't have when I finished school, when I took that job at Daily Tax Report, I considered starting my own newsletter then. I always wanted to be, you could say entrepreneur. I always had an entrepreneurial interest, but it wasn't. Entrepreneurs tend to be really worried about making money, and my focus was more being autonomous. I like creativity, not creativity in the sense of writing books or writing songs, but in the sense of, as a journalist, the thing that makes me happy is to find the news. You know, say what's the real news? What do people really need to know? Instead of, you know, what does the company want me to do because it makes the advertisers happy? So I always wanted autonomy, and I felt even at that age I wanted that, and I felt, well, a newsletter was the way to go. And it might have worked out well. There were a lot of newsletters at that time did very, very well. And I loved the idea, and it might have worked out well, but I didn't think at the time, and I still don't really think, that I knew enough about how the world worked to make it pay. You know, if I had had a father who had done that, he could have shown me the ropes, and it could have worked out great, but I didn't. My father was very helpful to me, but he wasn't able to help in that respect. And I think I would have failed. Now, I would have did some things right, but I would have did some things wrong, and I would have failed, is what I believe. And that's certainly what I believed at the time. So I didn't have the nerve to pull the trigger. I was tempted, but I didn't have the nerve. It was sort of a do what you love question. You know, I said, should I do what I love? And I said, no, I don't think so. I tend to think doing what you love, if you're able to go for it, sure. You know, if you're confident that you can do what you love and make a go of it, by all means. But if you have doubts, there might be a good reason for those doubts. Most of us, I don't think, have the broad knowledge needed. You know, you need to know how to do more than one thing to make a go of a business. So I think the better way to go is in your younger years, you know, work for a corporation and learn. You know, you can learn a lot if you get under somebody smart and somebody willing to teach. They might work you hard, but it's an education. And then when you've got some stability, you know, you got some money in the bank, I think it helps to have a family because you're settled. This is my opinion. Some people would say it's easier without a family. You have less responsibilities, but I feel it's easier to take chances when you have, having two wage earners is a big help. You know, say that you get married and maybe one spouse can go out on their own. And then 5 years later, after they've sort of made it, the other spouse can go out. But the point is, you know, mix the risk around. You know, don't have all. Whereas when you're single, it's like too much risk. It is less responsibility. That's the plus of it. But, you know, you've got all this emotional angst, you know, if you're dating or whatever. Whereas when you're married, you're sort of settled. So I think that's a better route personally. But there's pros and cons. But, you know, but you can go down that road, and in 5 years you might start out making less money. In 5 years, you're making double, triple. That, you know, the way our economy is set up, they call it a winner take all economy. The people who are really good in their niche just make tremendous amounts of money, and the people who are just average are being cut out. Frankly, that's what's happening. That's the trend. So as I say, I had an interest in doing this, and I didn't have the guts, and I think properly so. And I took corporate employment, and I worked my way up, and I did learn things I didn't know. I was always good. We all are good at some things and not others. So I was very good at some aspects of the work I do from the first day. You know, from the first day, I was better than my boss. But my boss was better than me at a lot of other things. So I had to pick up a decent skill set in the areas where I was weak before I could take advantages of my personal strengths. But as I say, I got to a point at Daily Tax Report where I'd gone as far as I could, and I loved that job when I started, but I got to a point where I was dissatisfied, and I hate it. You know, it was a sad thing because I hated leaving. I loved the place. I hated leaving, but I said, I have to. There's no place for me here. And I went to another company, which was presented a great challenge. I went to a place called Tax Notes, and it was a wonderful challenge. My writing moved ahead by leaps because I was writing my, rather than covering events and just being a stenographer in a way, I was writing a column. So I had to choose my own topics and research them and think them through. And it was original writing. So that was much tougher. And that improved me, sharpened me. But going to the small company left me vulnerable in a recession. And I lost my job, where I wouldn't have lost it at the big company. And that forced me to take a job I wasn't really that thrilled about at the big consulting firm. But they paid much better, and that's when I started saving. And then I saved up as much money as I could so that I could gain more autonomy. And during those years at the consulting firm, I don't think I grew very much in my skill set. And that made me sad. But I grew a lot in my bank account. So I just sort of turned, you know, from one to the other. I turned from having lots of growth in the skill set and nothing in the bank account to having nothing in the skill set and lots in the bank account. And after 9 years of that, I was able to jump off and do what I'm doing today, You know, it remains to be seen how much money I'm going to make. But I, you know, I'll just say, I think I'm a fair judge. I think the content of what I've produced is amazing. You know, I hope that won't be taken as bragging, but some of the work that I've produced, it's, if I went back to when I got that job at Daily Tax Report, my goal was to be a financial journalist. I feel that I'm at the top of the field today. And I, as I say, I don't mean that to sound bragging, and I'm grateful to all who have helped, and there are thousands of people who have helped. Community members at the indexing discussion boards and the retire early boards and you know, Motley Fool and Morningstar and you know, all the employers, Tax Notes and Daily Tax Report and Ernst & Young, all these people. My teachers, you know, I mean, all of them. And that's what's exciting about life, is that you're living at the top of this pyramid as you age. You know, you can't go out and run a marathon. I can't do that today. I die. I can't do that today. But, you know, I'm not dead yet. Maybe I'll get back to running. I'd like to get back to running. I'm thinking, I was discussing at lunch, maybe I'll get out there running with my boy. Maybe we'll run together. But I can produce. I can produce things I couldn't produce. You know, I couldn't have imagined producing. And I can, you know, I can turn out these podcasts. I mean, literally, I can. These podcasts amaze me because, oh, I love the podcast medium. I love the informality of it. And I literally can just come up here and record one. I scribble a few notes, but that's it. I mean, 10 minutes. And I just talk them out. And I can do that because it's all in my head, and I've posted on it, and I've studied it. And to me, that's the real thing. That's real. And but it's exciting. You know, I'm 52, and yeah, I've been working at it all my life, and I'm sort of at a pinnacle that I can do this. And you know, that's what I want for you. You know, obviously you're in a different field. I don't know if you're in the medical field or the insurance field or the, you know, electrician field, the accounting field. I don't know. But you can do that. And I can't tell you what path you should be following because I don't know the field. But all of those fields are, the principles, I think, are going to apply. All other, they're not all the same. They all have differences. But the basic principles are going to apply. Now, the key thing that goes on is, the key issue is specialization. See, one of the things that I always used to think about, I remember when I got this big raise, you know, I told you my joke about how I'd say, oh, well, you know, we get paid for this. You know, why do we get paid so much? When I took the job at Tax Notes, I told you I was dissatisfied at Daily Tax Report, and I would have taken the job at Tax Notes at a pay cut. I mean, I was desperate to change. And I actually interviewed. I interviewed with I think the managing editor there, and he told me I'd have to take a pay cut, but it was a big pay cut. I don't know how much, like a third. And I was like, well, I'm willing to take a pay cut, but I mean, this is how pathetic, sort of pathetic, but I was like, I was at the top. I had the highest job you could get at Daily Tax Report. I had risen to the highest level you could get. And this was a smaller company, Tax Notes. And he just said, we can't pay that much. And so I said, well, I said, I'm willing to take a pay cut, but I don't think that much. I don't think I can take that much. So I dropped it. But somehow word got to the owner, and the owner knew me. I had interned for him in school. And he found out, and then he called me in, and he came up with this deal, and he gave me this huge raise, 50% raise. You know, people were jealous. And I was just sort of laughing, because I was like, man, I'd do that. I wouldn't do it for free. I couldn't do it for free then. I wasn't as young. But I definitely would have did it for, you know, a small pay cut. But he was giving me this huge raise. And I asked myself, why? Now, why am I getting this huge raise? And the answer is, it's specialization. He was looking for a particular set of skills. He gave me this column that I wanted, but I also had to manage a database. And he didn't have anybody else who could do that. He had to have a lawyer. I had a law degree. He had to have someone with a background in taxes. You know, I was the congressional correspondent for the biggest publication in the field. You know, he wanted somebody he could trust because it was a high level job for his little company. It was a management level job, but he knew me. I had worked with him and on internship. So all of the pieces fit. And that's how you get paid large amounts of money. When they're looking for, you know, a very specialized, you know, set of skills, they can't find anybody else. So you don't have any competition. You're the ideal candidate, and they want the ideal. You know, when they're hiring somebody to sweep the floors, they'll just hire anybody off the street. But when they're hiring somebody for, you know, a high-level management position, they want somebody they can trust that's not going to let them down. And if you fit, you fit. And you're in the driver's seat. That's where you want to be. And you can make more money in a short amount of time in the driver's seat than you can make in a lifetime, you know, begging for scraps from the table. But again, you won't get there. Some people try to get there through, you know, pure ambition and manipulation and all this sort of thing. And some do get there that way. But most get there through passion. Do what you love. There really is a truth there. You know, the reason I had interned for the guy is that I love this field of tax. I loved it. So nobody else in law school wanted to intern for him, but I did. You know, you didn't get paid. It was a public interest group, and I didn't care. I wanted to be involved in tax reform, so I didn't care. So he knew me. So it all came together, and it will come together for you, but you have to, you know, it doesn't come together in a day. It takes planning, and that's where follow the money comes, because By getting your money situation more stable, you gain the ability to find the missing pieces so that you're perfectly specialized. And this is true. I've seen this many times in life. That one element of the puzzle that's missing, it can be the difference between making $50,000 and making $100,000. It really can. You might say, why does that matter so much? Well, they need one person with all the pieces, and you've got to get them all. And if you've got 4 out of 5 of the pieces, that's nice, but it's not enough. And if you got 5 out of 5, boom, you're unstoppable. I mean, I thought about this with Sarah Palin. I talked about her on a recent podcast, but one of the problems I think she ran into, you know, they took her from this. She's governor. She's super popular. What was 86%? Approval rating or something, 83, I don't know what it was. And they take her to be vice president, and, you know, it's just a couple months. She's going to go back to being governor. The problem is she was too much of a hit. She couldn't go back to being governor because, you know, some people say, well, she saw the bright lights. I think there's some truth in that. She had risen to a level in her career higher than what she had been doing before. And the people who didn't like her, you know, also didn't think of her as a governor. They feel, yeah, she might be a governor now, but she's going to be running for president someday. And, you know, we got to kill her before she does. So, you know, she, this is the problem we all have. That you want to rise, but once you rise, you can't necessarily go back. Or you'll be dissatisfied. So you've got to have a way to sort of make a transition. She was able to make this transition because, you know, she had this book deal and so forth. So she can provide for her family, you know, and she's got a husband that has a job. So, you know, she can do this. But you want to be in a situation where you can do it. You want to be in a situation where, you know, you have all the pieces. So that the specialization puzzle is complete. And the way you do that is by following the money, by paying attention to the money, by building the bridge. And ultimately what you're doing is you are integrating. Everything at my site is aimed at integration. It's aimed at integrating the practical and the dreamy. It's aimed at saying, why ultimately do I go to work? I mentioned earlier, I said we go to work in order to have money to pay the bills. Well, that's really only half of the story. We do go to work to have, if you don't have money to eat, you're going to be going to work to have money to eat, period. But most of us today, that's only half of the reason we go to work. We go to work to have autonomy. We go to work to leave the mark of our personality on the world. We go to work to exercise our creativity. And you need to protect that, protect your ability to do that. And in today's economy, you cannot count on your employer to protect it for you. You have to take on that job. We earn a lot more money today. We all say we don't have enough, but the reality is we earn a lot more money today than our parents did or our grandparents did. And just look at the size of our houses. Look at how many cars we have. Look at the kind of vacations we go on. And it tells the story. But what we don't do is plan. We don't manage our money. If you plan and you manage your money, plan your life, manage your money, you will open up opportunities. You will gain freedom. You will tap into that energy that comes with doing what you love, and you will become successful. Not overnight, but eventually. It's like being underneath a basketball hoop and learning how to position yourself for the rebound. And it's the team that is positioned for the rebounds that wins most basketball games. So I think that's the answer to the puzzle. This puzzle of, should you do what you love and the money will follow? Which sounds good, but sounds sort of dangerous. And we've all known people that it didn't work out. Or should you just say, yeah, you know, I'm going to take the bucks. I'm going to follow the straight and narrow. I'm going to, you know, do what my mother told me. take a safe career. Get good benefits. Get a pension. There's nothing wrong with good benefits and a pension, but you have to have autonomy. And if you have it, if you have a job you love, sure, stay in it, by all means. But save in case that job's not there one day, because nothing is stable in today's economy. And 2 years from now, it may not be there. So save so that you've got this thing in your back pocket that you can pull out called autonomy, called freedom, called opportunity. That's what it means when I say follow the money and you will love what you do. Follow the money, plan your financial affairs, and you will come to have the autonomy to do the work that you were put on earth to do, the work that will grant you the greatest impact on the world in the long run, and along with that, great financial success in most cases. I usually end my podcast saying good luck with your investing strategies. I'm going to have to come up with a new catchphrase for the saving ones. I don't know. Get your, you know, I'll have to think about it. Get your financial freedom. Get your, you know, get the passion. Get the passion. That's one I used to use back when I was selling my Secrets of Retiring Early report. So get the passion and take care.